Hey everybody, how are we? Hope we're all right. Welcome to episode 35 of the Alcohol Uncensored podcast. My name is Ian. I am over 6 years alcohol free. I've just come back from a nice holiday, which I'm going to tell you all about in a sec. Before I do that, I'm going to say hello to my co-host, Kelly Cooney. How are you getting on, Kelly?
I'm good, Ian. I'm good. Not much been happening, to be honest with you, just plodding along. I've got a busy couple of weeks over the next couple of weeks. And I hit my 1 year next year. So apart from that, I want to hear all about your holiday. Because it sounds
When do you hit your 1 year?
The 9th, a week on Wednesday.
Week on Wednesday. Happy
yeah,
days.
A week on
Happy
Wednesday.
Days.
So
yeah. And actually we're all buggered up with our recording, so probably by the time this comes out.
True.
So it's irrelevant.
It is. By the time this comes out, I will be hopefully all going well over a year.
You will
alcohol free.
Yeah.
How was the trip, Ian? That's what I've been desperate to find out about it. Tell us a little bit about
it.
I'm
knackered. That's the first thing to say. I'm knackered because, A, because of the trip I've been on, and B, we've just been out for a massive walk with my wife, and then we went for fish and chips afterwards, and I'm feeling absolutely bust. So I'm absolutely so. If I get a bit swollen in the tongue, it's not because I've been drinking. It's just because I'm absolutely sort of knackered. So you're gonna have to carry me for the next hour, Kelly. You're gonna have to carry me. I'm good. I'm good. I've had a great week. I've been cycling in the Netherlands with a mate of mine who was my best man when I got married years ago, and he messaged me. I spoke to him a few months ago and he said, "Do you fancy going cycling in the Netherlands?" I was like, "All right." He said, he'd just come back with a bunch of other lads and he said it was great. He said, but every 2 hours they wanted to stop and have a beer. He said, and he's not a big drinker, drinks, but he's not a big drinker. He says, and she said, every 2 hours we're stopping for drinks and sometimes they'd be having like 3 or 4 drinks and I would just want to get cycling again. And it was just like, it just became a piss up on bikes, basically, by the sounds of it. So I think he'd really enjoyed the cycling, but he hadn't enjoyed sort of, you know, everything else that they were trying to shoehorn in. So he messaged me and said, would you go? And we had an absolutely amazing time. It was brilliant. We just, I live in Newcastle, as you know, and got the ferry from North Shields, which is like, I cycled to the ferry in like half an hour, wheeled my bike on the ferry, got off the other side. We cycled to Amsterdam. We then got a train straight down to Eindhoven and then cycled from Eindhoven to this campsite just south of Eindhoven. And we had a week just going off to different, you know, different locations, different directions. And just, it was like being a kid again. You know what I mean? It was like sort of, it was just like being a kid. And it was like, you know, we often chat, don't we, about sort of enjoying the things you used to do before you started drinking. Well, I was big into my bike, you know, I've always liked biking. And I felt like a kid just cycling around all these, you know, these farms and sort of just through the forest. But you know, the Netherlands is made for cycling, obviously, with all the cycle lanes that they've got everywhere and stuff. So it was just like, it was just geared up for cycling and it was very flat, which made it really good as well. So yeah, I'm knackered, but I've had a lovely time and I feel really relaxed, if you know what I mean. And
yeah,
I feel like I've been away and just totally
yeah,
switched
some
off from work and from
wholehearted time with your friend. Yeah, you think of the amount of places that we miss getting to see. Because we would just go to the places where you could go for a nice meal and a nice glass of wine or a nice beer. And it's just, it's a bit sad, isn't it? The amount of places that we've missed out on over the years and that some people that don't decide to take the plunge and remove alcohol from their life never get to experience.
Yeah, totally. And this wasn't like a sort of, it wasn't a particularly touristy part of Holland, Netherlands. It was, you know, it was fairly sort of, other than on the campsite, there wasn't that many tourists around. So you got the impression you were seeing it like, you know, from a Netherlands point of view, you know what I mean? It wasn't just like, oh, it was just great. It was lovely. And I'm just so glad I went. And I'm so glad that, you know, well, I'm so glad he asked me. And I'm just so glad I said yes. And I put a post in the community when I was on the ferry on the way back saying, you know, the importance of saying yes to these things, the importance of like, if someone asks you to do something new, don't delay, don't dither or find reasons why you can't do it. Say yes, you know, say yes to all these new experiences. So, yeah, it was great.
Amazing.
It was great. Anyway, we've got a great guest with us today, haven't we?
We have
And
talking about experiences. This person has been here, there, and everywhere.
Kelly, that was my subtle way of sort of interluding into that, and you've blown it. You've just absolutely
Sorry, and it's
blown it
not
for me.
often I've got some good introduction lines, so I had to run with
Yeah. Well, that's what we want to talk about today. We want to talk with one of our fantastic community members, who is Lisa Banks, who is just gone 3 years, 3 months, and 3 days, albeit it's probably something like 10 days now, but it sounded good when she said it, so I thought I'd use it. Alcohol free, and she's been a member of, like us all, a member of the OTI community back in the day, and then she's been a member, obviously, with Alcohol Uncensored, pretty much since its sort of start as well. So, Lisa, how are you getting on? Good
I'm very
evening.
well, thank you. Yeah, good evening. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. And we've had a few teething troubles, haven't we? But it's safe to say that your sound sounds fantastic. So you're not letting the side down. So yeah, doing really
Not
well.
yet.
So Lisa, how's things been for you over the last week or so? Things keeping all right?
Busy, yeah. I'm going on holiday next week, so all the focus is on that. We're off to Canada to celebrate my partner's 50th, which was actually last November, but we've just got around to getting the holiday booked, and yeah, super excited about that. So yeah, you know, it's like holiday planning, everything's surrounding that. So
Canada would be amazing. I've never been to Canada. I'd love to go.
no, me neither. We're doing a bit of a trip, so we're flying into Toronto, and we're in six or seven different places on the way. So yeah, it's exciting.
Brilliant. Just before we came on, obviously, we were chatting about, you and your sort of backstory and stuff, and you said, you're really keen to talk about what happens after you stop drinking, and
Yeah.
we'll get into that in a minute, but I thought it was really interesting that you sort of felt that you've got a lot to say about how good life's been since you stopped drinking. And I think that's maybe the difference about tonight that we should maybe talk about is, it hasn't always got to be with a big backstory of, sort of, because we do hear some pretty sort of hellish stories,
Yeah.
don't we, of people's backstory. And I think, well, we'll get into your backstory, don't worry, but I think it'd be nice if today we can talk more about what happens when you stop drinking and how life opens up for you.
Yeah, sure.
Do you mind, but having said all that, do you mind just going back to the start, if you like, and just tell us a bit about you and your sort of youth, if you like, and your drinking story and how
Of
it got to a point
course.
where you knocked it on the head?
Yeah, so I'm a child of the 80s, which means that I was a teenager in the 90s. I think we all know what happened in the 90s. We had the introduction of Ludette culture and all the rest of it, which I was quite heavily influenced by. But before that, I was quite stereotypical teenager, living in a kind of rural area in the north of Scotland. So I would have been drinking with my friends and the woods and all the park benches and things like that from about 14. But my mum worked in hospitality and she ran a hotel. So I actually started working with her when I was about 14, 15 years old. So I feel as though my childhood was always kind of around about alcohol. You know, it was quite normal for alcohol to be around at home. We would drink wine at the table, dinner times and things. But then, of course, within the hospitality industry, I was working at weddings where people were drinking from 12 o'clock in the afternoon onwards. So I don't think it would have come as a massive surprise to anybody that I took to drinking in my early kind of teens quite well. I also like really got into kind of dance music and stuff, and I went to nightclubs and things on the circuit in the Northeast from about 15, 16. So I was introduced to quite a lot at a young age, and that kind of continued throughout my student days. I ended up going to university in Stirling, and again, very stereotypical kind of student life for 5 years. I did a bit of travelling because I did a German degree. So I've got travel stories for 2 years during my degree as well, which I just had a great time. You know, I've got no regrets about the way that my life went, but I can see that it was the start of enjoying a drink too much. So yeah, after university I graduated, and you know what that's like, it's a bit of a rite of passage as well. So
you start to have a little bit of disposable income. I was living on my own for a couple of years. So again, my drinking habits were forming slightly differently. I was probably starting to have a glass of wine every night with my dinner. Going out at weekends, I was a bit of a party girl. Like I'll self-label myself as that. I was probably always the first person at the bar. I was even before that, I would have been drinking before I got to the bar. First person at the bar, last person to want to leave the parties and things. But like I said earlier, it was almost accepted. You know, it wasn't talked about as a big deal. It was just like Lisa likes a drink. I surrounded myself with friends who also enjoyed a drink. And like I've said before, like my family were all drinkers as well. So it was just fairly normal. And then, of course, my 20s and 30s, a lot of my friends were getting married, which meant that we were on boozy hen weekends, boozy wedding weekends. And then it would be wetting babies' heads, all sorts of things. Any excuse, basically, to go out and enjoy ourselves, we would have been first in line. And I guess what I've been thinking about, knowing that I'm coming on to speak to you guys today, is where the party sort of ended, and where my drinking habits formed something slightly different, in that it wasn't just so much enjoying myself, you know, it became something more like a crutch. So, again, we've spoken about this a lot in the community and like on podcasts, but I would be using alcohol for celebration, for commiseration, you know, every single aspect of my life, alcohol was surrounding it. And I just kind of thought, I'm not 100% sure that this is going in the right direction. So there was the few times where I did dry January, things like that. And I knew that I kind of wanted to knock my habits on the head a little bit. But every time I finished a dry January, on the 1st of February, I would have lined up my next drink. And I could see that was also progressively getting a little bit worse as well. You know, I would have maybe taken the break, thought, I'm fine. I don't need to worry about my habits any longer. But then all of a sudden I'm like, there's things are creeping in just a little bit more. So for example, my partner and I would go out for a drink on a Thursday night. Now he would be quite happy to go out for a couple of drinks, and that's what we would agree. But then if it just finished after two drinks, I would notice that I was a little bit grumpy. You know, I didn't want it to finish. I didn't seem to have the off switch that everybody else did. So I would be in a bad mood coming back home after one or two drinks. And then, of course, once I've started on a Thursday, it progresses into the Friday, Saturday, and then quite notoriously a Sunday. And I can't really remember getting to the stage where that wasn't as much fun. But something certainly changed, whether it's age, experience, or just the alcohol, the need for topping the alcohol up more and more came in. So after a few dry Januaries, I think we were coming up to maybe COVID. So COVID hit, and I decided again, everybody went in the opposite direction to me and drank much more. But I thought, oh, I'm going to join 1 year no beer. So I initially started off doing a 30-day challenge, which I then extended to 90. And then I was really enjoying that time. You know, we were locked down. I was doing a lot of online fitness things. I just felt really strong, very healthy. And also I felt like I wasn't really missing out on anything, because you know what it was like during lockdown. Like nobody was going out drinking. So this was the ideal opportunity for me to really try and embrace alcohol-free life. Which I did for 123 days. And then I hit 123 days and I thought, that'll do me again. Here we go back on this cycle. So, like I say, I was drinking, stopping again, always reevaluating where I was in my story. And then it came to, so what are we in now? May 23. I'd had a very busy start to that year. And I had just had absolutely enough. And I thought, no, I really, really, really do need to address this. I was just sick of being hungover. I was sick of feeling just off point. And then I noticed what was really starting to happen was when I was hungover, a hair of the dog type drink was always on the table for me. It was always appealing because it would take the edge off the hangovers that I was feeling. And then that would kick this other cycle off, where the hair of the dog would then sort of equal me out a little bit, And then I would just carry on drinking. So it's this vicious cycle of never ending drinking alcohol just to feel on point, but then taking it too far. And then I suppose that was me really entering the binge drinking official territory. So on one of my binges, I managed to sign myself up for Over the Influence on a year's subscription. And I kind of woke up the next morning and thought, did I do that last night? And of course, I check all my emails. And yes, I have actually woken up to a sign basically that I had signed myself up for 1 year of that wonderful community Over the Influence. And I just thought to myself, this is it. This is time. I've done so much work in the background. I was listening to the podcast. I was reading books. I was really interested in changing my life, but I was always very, very scared of getting to that point of A, probably admitting that alcohol was becoming extremely problematic for me. I was going through these cycles of thinking I was okay, thinking I'd ditched it a little bit, and then just coming straight back to the start. And then also just worried about what the future looked like. And I think that's a very, very common issue. So how do you go on holiday without having a drink? How do you go to gigs without having a drink? I'm a football fan. Do you really go out and watch football without having a drink? And even sometimes, a nice plate of spaghetti bolognese. How do you have that without a nice glass of red wine? It was so insidious in my life. It was unbelievable. So unraveling all of that, I think it's a very scary place to get to. Like, will I actually enjoy myself without alcohol being present in my life? So it gets to the stage where I've got the membership, and I just thought it, I'm going to go for it. So I completely threw myself into the community at the time, which was an absolute lifeline for me. And I don't think I would have been able to do it without me having signed myself up for it, and then me throwing myself into the community and getting all the support and mentoring that I did from everybody that took the Zooms and read any of the posts. And yes, it's been an absolute game changer for me. So I don't know, I've probably missed a lot in between those periods, but yeah.
There's a couple of things I want to ask straight off the bat. One of them, actually, I was just thinking whilst you were talking there about when did I first start thinking that drink wasn't just brilliant, if you know what I mean? As in,
Yep.
when you're younger, and for me anyway, speaking personally, when you're in your teens, when you're in your 20s, possibly when I'm in my 30s, I'm not quite sure. When did I start to think this is actually not great all the time? Because I was for 50 years, like the hangovers were a bit of a badge of honor. It was almost like, yeah, I feel rough, I feel rough. Oh, must have had a good night, did you? Must have been great. Oh yeah, it was brilliant. What did you get up to? Well, I can't really tell you. I just know that I had a great night. And at what point did I start to sort of did it start to affect me negatively? And I think it was what you said there about the it was the hair of the dog, and it was the sort of, what you needed to sort of have a drink to sort of come out the other end. And also what I remember, what made it for me as well before that was actually the nights when I couldn't go out. Say my friends weren't going out, or I was skint and I couldn't afford to go out, and I was in such a bad mood because life almost wasn't worth living because I couldn't go out. I was missing something, this massive FOMO of what I was going to miss. And maybe that was the start of things being a bit of a problem, that life was almost like not worth living if I wasn't going out and drinking.
No, exactly. And it's funny when you reflect back on it, because obviously these things are very gradual and it's not a linear path for anybody. But it must creep in that way. It's all fun and games at one point, but then it obviously just becomes problematic. And of course, I mean, that is the nature of alcohol. It's a poison at the end of the day, and it's a very highly addictive substance. So,
I think it's a reflection that will resonate with so many people, because Ian's 6 years down the line and it actually clicks something in him, because it's something that you've obviously really thought about, reflected on about when that kind of changed. And we spoke about this before, about that, like going in a mood because you wanted the drinking to carry on. And I think there'll be so many people listening to this that will resonate, not only with that, but a lot that you've said. And I just want to thank you off the bat just now as well for your honesty, because a lot of people will be sitting listening as well, like, God, that's me. And there's so much shame behind admitting the hair of the dog, admitting that you could see it creeping in and could see it being problematic when in actual fact it's normal. It's so normal in society,
Yeah.
but just not as many people talk about it. So I want to say thank you for your honesty and for, because I think it'll
Yeah.
help a lot of people, Lisa.
But I mean, I can even remember back in, my teens, when I was working throughout my uni time and everything, like I would always be the one that could face a drink the next day. I was never the person that was repulsed by it. And I remember just thinking, God, my friends can't handle it. But in actual fact, I would much have rather be in the other direction than been able to top myself up. But
Yeah, but the good thing and the great conversation that we're going to be having is how you can change that and how good life becomes when you remove alcohol from your life. Because what I love about, I mean, we've spent a lot of time together, Lisa, and became good friends. And what I love is that you've seen the signs, jumped off the bus, and completely changed your life. And you have done so much, not just with the activities that you've done and the places you've went, but on yourself as well. And you did throw yourself into the community to give it your full arses. The old French chefs used to say. So yeah, I'm looking forward to getting stuck into that.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I think that's probably what put me off stopping drinking full time for so many years, even though I knew that it was becoming problematic, is what does life look like afterwards? Because it's so ingrained in everything that I do, in all my friendship groups, in my family, and everybody that practically that I spend time with. So then you're going, am I going to lose all of this? Basically all of my hobbies surrounded alcohol, going to gigs, obviously that used to go hand in hand. And I remember having to go on a sober gig during COVID. And I absolutely loved it. So this was before I stopped drinking full time. But it was such a kind of emotional experience because you're so connected to the artist, you're so connected to the music, you're not bothered about the bar queues, you're not having to go to the toilet every 2 seconds, you're not trying to enjoy yourself exuberantly and piss everybody else off around about you. It's just you there for the purpose of what you've paid for the ticket. So I think those types of lessons are the most valuable lessons. I feel like my sober story started the day I stopped drinking. Because I've always kind of lived by not having any regrets, and I don't have any regrets on the way that I kind of grew up around about alcohol. There's not one sort of area of my life that's to blame for the fact that it became problematic in my later life. And it's all shaped who I am now, obviously, as well. I think one of the nicest things that's happened since I stopped drinking as well was I overheard my friend exclaim. Another friend basically had said, "Oh, what about her? She stopped drinking." And one of my best friends had just turned around and went, "Yeah, but look at her. Like she's not changed. She's still the same old Lisa. She's out having a laugh, She's still the last person out, although maybe not so much nowadays. I do quite like my pajamas." But yeah, I mean, those types of accolades and, knowing that I'm still the same person and I've still got the confidence to go out and enjoy myself and up to a limit. Yeah, those are the important lessons I think I've taken from stopping.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Lisa, because I was just thinking when for all the time I've known you sort of in OTI and in alcohol and senses, you haven't changed. You've been sort of fairly sort of what's the word I'm trying to
Lisa.
use? Just Lisa, you've just been Lisa. Whereas a lot of people, we see a lot of people that do change. They almost, they might become more confident, or they might become people that you hear people talking about saying, "Oh, I used to think I was an extrovert, and then actually I realized I was an introvert," or "I realized this about myself," or "I've suddenly developed and I've got into this." All the time I've known you, you've been very sort of consistent, if you know what I mean. So I feel like I probably knew the old Lisa. The only difference was she drank and she was adding all these things into it that she just didn't need, if you know what I mean. You seem quite comfortable with yourself. You seem quite sort of, you know who you are, you know what you're interested in. Are you with me? But you seem to get you but you get more out of yourself almost.
Absolutely agree with you. And I think I don't feel like I've changed that much. I've taken all the negativity out of myself. I've taken all the aspects that I really didn't like about drinking, Lisa. So I didn't trust myself, and that's just a horrible place to be. And that could be, really minor things like I want to go and run in the morning. And 9 times out of 10, I would go and run, but it wouldn't be very nice. I wouldn't enjoy myself if I was hungover. Whereas now I know that I can trust myself, and I know in the morning when I wake up that I've got everything that I went to bed with. I can remember everything that I do and say to people. I trust my emotions. I'm intuitive, and I know that it's not, negatively like triggered by alcohol or anything like that. So yeah, I just feel like I'm becoming more genuine. And I think that's something that a lot of sober people talk about is, you're true to your 15, 16-year-old self again, aren't you? A lot of people pick up habits and hobbies that they used to do when they were that age, where I have as well. I still love all the things that I did when I was drinking, but I now love sitting down with a nice book and a nice cup of tea, just like I did when I was younger. So yeah, there's all those kind of characteristics to life that just makes everything much more rich.
Yeah, I think that's really important, Lisa, what you've said there. I think that that thing about sort of knowing what you enjoyed doing before you started drinking. It sounds like you were quite bedded into them. You've talked about the gigs, and you've talked about you were doing all those things, but maybe the version of them you were doing wasn't like as good as it can be because you were blurring them, if you know what I mean. I mean, the gigs, for example, you talked about the gigs. And talking about going to gigs, and we talk about this quite a lot in the community, don't we? That when people go to gigs, and we used to do it, or we see people, other people doing it now, who are absolutely hammered, and sort of, they can't enjoy the gig, because they're either constantly going to the toilet, constantly going to the bar, just constantly talking to the mates,
Such a waste.
just such a waste, and you're paying such money for the tickets these days, and. I know you talked about it quite a lot in the community, but tell us a bit about the old gigs versus the new gigs, because I know that's something that's quite, you've always been keen on your concerts.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, for a start, I went to Tea in the Park a lot, so obviously those types of carnage weekends in my history of drinking, versus going to Kendal Calling last year, where I camped sober and I had the best time. Nothing, there's just no negatives to not drinking. For example, the money you spend on drink, the queues you have to go through, like the toilet situation, everything I mentioned before, and then not remembering, the experience, or your favorite song being played, or you look at your phone and all you're doing is screeching, and you're bashing into people and annoying other people. There's just nothing like a sober gig. And like I said earlier on, the connection you have to the people around about you. And what I've actually noticed, to be frank, is how many or how few people actually drink the way I probably used to drink at a gig. I noticed very few people pushing past to get to the bar. I think many more people enjoy it for the experience, rather than, the excuse to go out. But that was just synonymous to me. Like, there was no way I would have gone to a gig without having a drink. And for example, now the best thing about it is I can drive, I can park up, and I can get myself safely home within like 10, 15 minutes. I'm lucky enough to have most of the venues around about me here within a 10, 15 minute drive home, and I don't have to worry about taxi queues or anything like that. So it's just night and day.
I think that'll be interesting for listeners to hear as well, because I know when you said that, I wouldn't have thought. I just assumed that people go to gigs and get absolutely pissed, and it's just interesting to hear you say that. So there's not as many people getting drunk as you think there are, and there'll be a lot of
Not at
people sitting
all.
at home thinking, "Well, you can't go to a gig without drinking," but actually,
Yeah.
there's a lot of people there doing it.
And do you know one reason that I know? See, when artists ask you to start clapping your hands, I was never able to clap my hands because mine were full of pints. Now all of a sudden, everybody's clapping their hands, and you're like, "Oh, that's what you do with your hands when you're at a gig."
Let's talk about your first year, Lisa. How did that first year go, when you joined the community? Like, how easy, difficult was it to navigate all those things?
I will not lie. I was terrified. I was absolutely terrified. I was terrified to join in the Zooms. I think I did my first couple of Zooms with my camera off, and I just listened. And I kept thinking, "What am I doing? Like, I've got this community full of sober people. Like, what am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to immerse myself?" But do you know what? The best thing to do is just pull the plaster off. Like, this is the situation I'm in. When I initially started, I wasn't 100% sure if this was going to be a forever thing, and I just promised myself, just see how it goes. You don't need to commit to anything just now, just see how you're feeling. But within the first week, I actually had a gig. So I went to see It was Roger Waters, and then I had a 50th party, which I wouldn't have actually enjoyed had I been drinking, because I had to drive 45 minutes to get to it. And I actually went on my own because it was a work colleague, and I had such a nice time that I drove home and I was very emotional because I thought, this is what life can be like. You know, I just sat and spoke to loads of different people, introduced myself to people, had a lovely afternoon at this party. But I probably wouldn't have gone because I couldn't have got public transport. And of course, I wouldn't have gone and not drank. So, you know what I mean? I had quite a lot of trips away in my first year as well. I do remember the first time that I went to London, and I really heavily relied on the community at that point because I was still quite early days, maybe about 2 months sober. And I was worried about, you know, a weekend trip to the city. And I felt a wee bit like a petulant child, you know, like, what am I supposed to do? This isn't fair. But do you know what? Again, like, it opened my eyes a little bit because there's loads of alcohol-free options in the pubs, especially in London. You get everything on draft. So if you can kind of just get into the same vibe, but not have to have any of the worries or anticipation about how the night's going to end. You know, you can just enjoy the moments in the pub without having that apprehension about the rest of the day. What else did I do? I also threw myself into sober communities locally as well. So there was a Facebook group that I joined, and that was specifically for sober girls in the Glasgow area. And they had a walking group. So I went on quite a few hikes with them around about the city, and, you know, a wee bit further afield and things, and just kind of gleaned their experience as well. They were a little bit further ahead than me. And that was fascinating because you just realize that there's a world out there as well where there's local people to you. It's not just internet friends that you've got. You can actually socialize with people that don't drink in your local area and reignite those interests again, like getting out in nature and stuff. Because I used to do a lot of that. But then, of course, when your main game is to end in the pub, and once you've had one or two drinks in the pub, you don't really leave it, do you? It was nice to get back into all of that. I also then went to do the Ben Nevis trip with OTI, and that was a game changer again, you know, just meeting people in the community face to face. It was brilliant. I really had a great time. But of course, again, the nerves were there. You know, I'm thinking I'm driving up to Fort William on my own on a Friday night, and I'm away to stay in a youth hostel full of people that I don't know. And I'm like, what am I doing? This, you know, 16-year-old me would never believe that this is what I'm doing in my 40s. But what a weekend that was. And that's when I first met you face to face, Kelly. So yeah, I just kind of got myself involved as much as I could with things like that. I had my first alcohol-free holiday abroad as well. So we went to Turkey, which isn't a drinking culture anyway. But the resort we were staying in was predominantly Turkish, so they didn't really have that kind of Brits abroad scene, if you know what I mean, like where some of the Turkish resorts do, which was a good thing and a bad thing for me because I was really heavily reliant on alcohol-free beers and things at that time. And I think we found one pub that sold them, and I drank the place dry over the 10 days. But it also taught me, you know, because they had many more coffee shops and lovely little ice cream shops and things like that. And I thought, this is a really nice way to spend your time on holiday. You know, just change the program a little bit. Don't feel like you have to have a nod to the drinking, Lisa. Like, try new things. Sit and have a coffee after your dinner. So that was really encouraging as well. You know, seeing loads of people out laughing and children running about and stuff. You know, your holidays can still mean something just because you're not drinking any longer. So that was a really good kind of first start. And now I absolutely relish a sober holiday. I think it's the best thing, honestly. Getting up earlier in the morning, you know, having much more energy, clearer head, focus, do what you like. And you come back just a very different person. I mean, I used to come back from some of these holidays absolutely hanging. Just, it's not,
Broken.
yeah, exactly. Like, needing another holiday. But it's completely different now. And I think those are the things that I feel most passionate about. If you want to stop drinking, and if you feel like you're going in a direction, and it doesn't have to be anything particularly serious. You know, if it's just a direction that you feel uncomfortable with, or you feel that you could better yourself about, don't be put off like I was for a long time about these scenarios. They are better. Everything in my life I do now is much better, and I can't believe I'm saying that because I was the party girl. But yeah, it's definitely worth trying.
Yeah.
Would you say the first year, did you make a point of getting all those firsts? We talk about that quite a lot in the community, like your first wedding, your first holiday. Did you make a point of getting those under your belt, or was it just occasions that came up in the year?
I think it's a little bit of both. I didn't shy away as much as I think some people might because I had had a few stints, and like I say, I had kind of had the comfort of COVID when I had done that first 4 month stint. And then this time I thought, well, you're never going to know if this is forever until you've tried things. You know, there's no point in hiding it away. You're going to have to go out in the big bad world and see what things are like sober. So there was a little bit of both. My first sober wedding was my partner's brother. And that was quite difficult because they're all big drinkers as well. And I was a little bit, to begin with, I was a little bit conscious, self-conscious of not drinking, and I didn't want to bring attention to it. So I just felt like everybody was kind of looking, or when we first walked into the bar area, for example, you know, somebody had asked me quite normally what I would like to drink, and I just snapped at them and said, well, I've not had a look at a menu yet. Whereas normally it would have just been a gin and tonic or a pint of this. But that night, actually, it was Shaz that had given me some advice about what to do, and we'd parked the car, and I just left everybody to it once I'd had my cup of tea and, you know, a wee dance and all the rest of it. And I drove home, got into my pajamas, and I was just like, I've done it. Like, I've gone out, I've enjoyed myself, I've showed up for people, I've been on the dance floor, I've been the person that they, you know, they wanted to be there. And I've left before the carnage starts, and that's the biggest tick, isn't it? You know, nothing ever happens that's worth or not worth missing after 12 o'clock.
I sometimes look at people and who were drinking. So, for example, when I was on the ferry coming and going back from the Netherlands, and I watching people in the bar having a drink, and I've got to be careful when I say this because it sounds like I'm, you know, I was a big drinker. I was somebody who used to sort of like drink at every single occasion, and you know, I don't want to come across like a, you know, some sort of reformed smoker who suddenly tells everybody that they shouldn't be smoking. But like, I was looking at people on the ferry, and none of them looked like they were enjoying the drinks. They were just sat with the obligatory drink in front of them, just staring at the person they were with, or maybe having a bit of a sort of conversation that, don't know, didn't look particularly funny. You think, and I said, it just got me thinking about how much what I would call unnecessary, pointless drinking I used to do, where, you know, because there was a bar there, oh, well, I'll have a pint, I'm going on my holidays. Forgetting the fact that I'm on a ferry that makes me feel sick at the best of times. Why do I then want to sort of have four or five drinks to sort of increase my chances of feeling sick and just feeling crap and having a crap night's sleep? And just the amount of unnecessary drinking that I used to do. And it goes beyond the point where you're having nights out where, you know, maybe it was part of the night out, if you know what I mean. And, you know, again, I don't really miss those now, but it just starts to in sort of encroach on all parts of your life, doesn't it? When suddenly everything involves drinking, and it's like it's just hard to get away from it, isn't it? Until you sort of come out the other end, and like you're saying now, look back and think, you know, I don't need to do all these things and have a drink. In fact, it's making those scenarios worse, not better. But it's just a habit you get into, isn't it?
And like I say, looking back, it's almost incredible, like how those habits form. I would never have been the person sitting. Let's say you've gone for a hike and we've gone for a drink afterwards. I would never be the person that's gone, I'll just have a Coke. Like it was a absolute definite that I would be ordering a pint. And it becomes habitual, and then I don't know how you just have to really break that cycle. And it's only once you're through the other end that you realize how ridiculous it is, you know. There's just so much else to do.
You talk about those drinks as well, those necessary drinks, and like you're like think, well, this is I'm traveling, so I need to have a drink, or I'm here, so I should have a drink. And it never, if it was just like one or two drinks, then most people would be kind of happy with that. But you might not want to have a drink, and then you have those drinks that you deem necessary because of the situation you're in. And then once you've had those couple of drinks, that's you off and running again.
Yeah,
It's like,
but
it's just, yeah.
I was like Lisa, you know, to me, there was no point in having a drink. And really, if I was having two, well, I might as well have three because I'm here now and I'm not going to do anything else because I've had two drinks. So I might as well have three. I've had three. Well, I've one before I go to bed. Then I'll push it. I'll have another one. Before you know it, one's turned into five. And that's just, and that's just standard, just for,
Exactly.
and not even planning to have a drink. And yeah, it's just, I say it, and I don't say it because I hope people don't listen and think, I've listened to them bloody pumped up bloody know-it-alls. But I just know it because I know that's what I was like. That's how I was. It was just like, it just became the be-all and end-all, didn't it? But it was just all-consuming, and you couldn't break the cycle, could you? You didn't, you just couldn't break the cycle. And it
Well, we
takes,
spoke.
it take for us, probably for all three of us, it took that sort of brave step of joining a community of people who you don't know, who you just think, oh, these aren't like me. I'm not the sort who sort of turns up in some random car park and speaks to complete strangers, or I'm not the sort of go on a Zoom and start bearing my soul, but here I am doing it. And it's
Yeah.
just, it's just funny, isn't it? But I think to me, it needs something like that. For me, you
Yeah.
needed that really big change.
I think as well what you're saying about the Zooms are really important within the community for that exact thing. Like when you spoke there about those necessary drinks, and I'd said, well, it's because you have those necessary, not necessary, but I can't think of the word, obliged, obligatory, can I say it? Those drinks.
Obligatory,
Obligatory,
obligatory
there you
drugs.
go. Ian said it for me. I'll tell Annie to keep that bit in. You have those drinks, and you have like the one or two that you feel that you need to have, and then you drink more. And we were talking about that in Zoom the other night about how our brains still, there was someone sharing that they still say to themselves, I'm just going to have a couple of drinks. And they know fine well that it's never just a couple of drinks, but it takes a while to be able to stop yourself in those moments where you think, right, I'm just going to have a couple of drinks tonight. And you've got to stop and think, actually, is this going to be a couple of drinks? I need to play this forward here. And I think that's the beauty of being part of a community and sharing just little simple conversations like this, because it reminds you and flags things in your mind.
And it's I'm just thinking that as well. I used to almost be waiting for a situation where somebody would be, somehow we'd be able to turn one or two drinks into a lot. And if somebody suggested it, I'd get myself all excited. Oh yeah, more
Yep.
drinks. And this person just suggested it, so therefore it must be okay. And oh man.
Absolutely guilty of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, 100%. You'd be almost gleeful, wouldn't you? Like, it wasn't even my idea, but here we go.
But if they've suggested it, we'll have to. It's like,
Yeah.
oh.
Yeah.
So, Lisa, we've spoke about a lot about your year one, and I feel as if, like, well, what else could you do? Because you fit a lot in your year one. But how's your life looked over the past couple of years? And what improvements have you seen?
It's just unbelievable. So, not to mention health, sleep, all these kind of things that go hand in hand. Money, that's something that people don't talk about enough. Like the amount of money that you waste when you're drinking on all sorts of things, not just the alcohol itself, but everything associated with it. But me personally, I think it's about the growth and the person that I am. And like we say, I might not have changed that much externally, and my interests might not have changed that much, but I am the person that I wanted to be. I am calm. I am positive. That's another thing. Like, I used to be quite fly off the handle, negative. Everything was a catastrophe. Very dramatic. And now I'm very even keeled. I'm calm. I'm just the person, like I say, that I wanted to be. And that the biggest part of that is being able to trust myself. If I decide that I want to do something, I'm going to show up and I'm going to do it just like I have in the sobriety journey. And I don't know, it's just like life is so much more genuine. The friendships I have, I've got a couple of friends that don't know drinking, Lisa. So they may be shocked by hearing some of these things. But, my relationships are better. And my outlook on life is just much better as well. I try and celebrate every year. So the first year, for my 1 year anniversary, I booked a camping holiday, well, a camping evening with a group of women. It was a wellness kind of thing. And I thought this is a fabulous thing to do. So the second year I went on a sober butterfly retreat, and this year I went to Norway. So I just feel like I want to celebrate my success with it all the time and just keep kind of growing into that person.
I love that. Love that.
I think it's important to sort of almost feed it, if you know what I mean. Feed that sort of pride in what you do. For me, just going away on that week of cycling and that, I just every day I thought I wouldn't be doing this if I wasn't
Exactly.
qualified and stopped drinking. I'm so lucky that I get to do this. And then you come back and you think, right, what am I going to do next? Because I've done that. And now I'm not going to do this, by the way, so don't worry. But I googled the John O'Groats to Land's End, sort of on
Lolly jog.
with
You're
Led Zeppelin.
so
I
going to
thought,
do that. You're so going to do that.
but even if I don't, the fact that I'm looking at it and I'm thinking I could do that, I could do this, and I can do, and I was lying there last night thinking, how would I do it and stuff. And it might be I don't do that, but you know what I mean, don't you?
It
You're
opens
always then
doors.
thinking about it, opens doors, exactly that. It's sort of, you're then thinking, right, what else am I going to do? Life soon becomes a bit more of a challenge, doesn't it?
It sounds so cliche and so cheesy, but you really can do anything you want to do when you remove alcohol from your life. You've got so much more time, so
That's the
much
other
more
thing,
clarity
yeah.
of mind, so much more money. Like, and you can actually plan things and think, I will stick to that. If I want to do it, I can do it.
Exactly. And like you, Ian, every one of those three trips I've just mentioned that I've done to mark my sobriety, I would never have considered as a drinker. The trip to Norway where we're camping, it's just something I would have been horrified about. Like, where am I going to sit and have a drink? It sounds absolutely horrible. Whereas it was the most beautiful experience I've ever had. So it just opens doors, and it continuously opens doors. And it's exciting then, because you're like, you like, what's next? What else can I see? What other corners of the world can you go and explore?
And speaking about doing brave things, I know we won't spend too much time on this. We covered it a few weeks ago after the Beaver Challenge event, but that was a massive challenge for you, wasn't it? You really put yourself into sort of, like, pardon the pun, but sort of dark waters in terms of things you'd never done before, didn't you?
No,
Tell us a little bit
absolutely.
about that, and tell us how you felt going into that and how you felt coming out and having done it all.
Yeah, I mean, so interestingly, I have run a couple of marathons, and the reason I'm saying this is because I trained for my first marathon while I was drinking, celebrated my first marathon by getting completely pissed, as you do. My second and third marathons were sober. And my third was actually on my 1 year anniversary in Edinburgh. So I'm no stranger to having to do training plans and, really sticking at things. But the triathlon was, like you say, something completely out of my comfort zone. But that's exactly what I wanted. I could have done anything at that event, and I decided, no, challenge yourself, push your boundaries a little bit. And I am so proud that I did it, because I'm terrified of swimming, let alone swimming in open water. I bought myself a wetsuit. I went for swimming lessons, completely pushed the boundaries, and that's again something that I would never have considered doing as a drinker. But I kick off my swimming lessons were on a Sunday night at 8 o'clock at night. Now, that would have heavily eaten into my drinking time previously, so it wouldn't have even have been an option for me to sign up for something like that. So yeah, I just love my life now, and I love the fact that I'm brave enough to try all these different things. My life was very, very sheltered when I was a drinker, and I can see it now in other people, like my family who still drink. I've been lucky with my friends, because I think I was probably quite the bad influence in my friendship groups, and I think they've taken a little leaf out of my book, where we can just cut our down our drinking before we end up like completely cutting it out, like Lisa has. But yeah, I can see that people's lives become quite small through alcohol, and like I just feel like ours just grow and get bigger, and the opportunities, like we were just saying, like just come much more quickly.
Yeah. Do you know what? I was just you were talking about your life being small. I was sitting on Saturday night, and I was so bored. It's one of those nights I was like, I'm bored, I'm on my own. This is rubbish. And I'd actually put a post on social media, because it would have been the prime example where I would have been like, it's Saturday night, I need to do something, I need to have a drink. Obviously, those thoughts don't come into my head anymore, but that would have been a time where I would have done it, and I would have had a drink just to do something, And then it had a knock-on effect for my whole week. Whereas I just had an early night. So it felt in the moment that my life was smaller and everyone was out enjoying themselves. But in actual fact, just by going to bed early that night, my life is opened up for the following week. I can be
Exactly.
productive. I've got our weekend trip away. It does make it so much smaller, and yet we think it doesn't.
And these things to build on each other as well, don't they? So you know, you using your example there of the triathlon, when you've done something like that and you've applied yourself and you've gone and you've learned the things that you were not deficient in, but the things you needed to brush up on, whether it's biking or the swimming or whatever, and then you've applied yourself and you've got through that nerves. It then applies to other parts of your life. So I've noticed, for example, that with work, I'm a lot more confident with work. You know, I used to have a real sort of worry about keeping everybody happy with work now, whereas I kind of sort of I can be a lot more sort of balanced, and you know, I don't hold everybody else sort of above me, if you know what I mean. I think, well, my values and my sort of standpoint on this is just as important, but because I've got more confidence, which has come from, you know, achieving things outside of work, I can hold my own more, if you know what I mean. And I'm sort of I've got more power in my own convictions, and it doesn't make me cocky or smarmy or anything like that. At least I hope it doesn't. But you know,
No, it's quite the opposite, actually. I think
yeah.
that I completely agree with you. I think it does the opposite. I think it's just you've opened up yourself, and like you trust yourself. I know I've said that a couple of times, but I think that's key to it. You trust your judgments, and I've definitely got much more clarity at work as well. Yeah, it's just so significant.
It's a quiet confidence, isn't it? It comes from sort of knowing yourself a bit more, you know, not
Exactly.
having your own judgment clouded as much, not being as foggy. Just, but it takes time, doesn't it? It takes time, and it doesn't happen overnight. But
No,
it's
definitely
just
not.
if you back yourself more. So then, when you do come, when you say something, you say it with a bit more sort of purpose and poise and certainty, because you know it's true. Well, it's true as far as you can see things, because like you say, you trust yourself more, and it's massive, isn't it?
Yep, who knew?
Yeah. Who knew, Kelly? Who knew we'd end up doing this
Oh
sort
God,
of
I know.
yeah.
What would you say, Lisa, to anyone sitting on the fence, or anyone that's kind of questioning their drinking, but not like a bit apprehensive about what their life's going to look like? What piece of advice would you give them?
If you can take anything from me seriously, I could never have imagined getting to such a comfortable stage in my life without alcohol. And as Ian's just said there, you know, it takes time. There are some scary moments. But if you do feel, I think Niall said something very similar a few weeks ago on the podcast, if you do feel like something's not quite right in your drinking journey, then you should trust your instincts and just even try and make the change. And you can be supported by podcasts, by books, but certainly by the community. And I think one of the other community members mentioned this on a soundbite for you guys. You know, you join these clubs if your interests align. So if you're wanting to learn to play badminton, you go to a badminton club. If you're wanting to start running, you go to a running club. If you want to lose weight, you join a swimming club. This is just exactly the same. It's like-minded people there to support through every single aspect of becoming sober and starting to enjoy your life. I had a lot of mentoring through Over the Influence, and that's the reason that I'm in this community now, because I'm happy to mentor other people that are a little bit earlier in the journey, because you need that support. And it doesn't need to be overbearing or overpowering. It's just knowing that somebody else is there that gets what you're going through, because it's tough. You know, alcohol is everywhere, and it's just nice to have people that understand you. So I would definitely recommend podcasts, books, and community.
Yeah.
Amazing. I felt quite emotional listening to you there, Lisa. I actually got a bit
Don't know where that
emotional.
came from.
That was amazing.
What do your sort of friends and family make of your not drinking? I mean, you mentioned your friends who kind of are all probably, you know, sort of wiping their brow saying, thank God she stopped drinking because she was leading us down the right sort of dark path. But what about everybody else? Are they, has it all been positive, or has it been some tougher
I
bit?
mean, my family are okay with it. I don't think it's widely spoken about. They probably are a bit worried about what led me to the decision. But you know, I've spent a lot of time with my family. It's very accepted now that I don't drink. In fact, I was up a couple of weeks ago for my birthday, and it's just very normal now. You know, like in the beginning, I think it was always like, oh, don't know whether to offer you a drink or not. But now it's just like, well, do you want a cup of tea? I think my signature drink. I certainly, my friends have all given me extremely positive feedback, you know, and I love that. I love the fact that I've been very lucky with my friends. And I know that that sometimes can be a sticking point for a lot of people and it's difficult, but I've also forged, like I said earlier on, a lot of sober friendships and a lot of sober groups out, within and out with this community. And I've started new things as well, you know, a mentor at schools, and I think that passing the message on there is really important as well. I think children nowadays are very different. I feel like a lot of them are allowed to stay much younger than I was when I was 15, 16 years old. So it's nice just to have that positivity in that environment as well and just try and protect them a little bit from the inevitable. But overall, I would say it's been, you know, very positive.
Yeah.
I've been lucky, and my partner's extremely supportive as well. He still drinks, and you know, we still go to the pub together, and we enjoy nights out and things like that. He enjoys the chauffeur service that he gets, the gigs and everything. But yeah, I've been quite lucky.
Often ask this question quite a lot, but I still don't know what the answer is. But do you think that people's views on the benefits of not drinking and drinking in general are changing? Or do you think we all spend a lot of time talking about it in this way, and therefore we think that everyone thinks similar to us? I still haven't quite worked out what
It's
the
a really good question. And I think it's obviously also skewed a little bit because I've now got into the I don't know why MD would care zone. You know, like why would MD care if I'm drinking or not? I'm not saying nobody else drink around about me. I'm quite happy to be in that environment. So why bother whether I'm drinking or not? Now, I say that from the respect that when people would do that to me years ago and say that they weren't drinking on a night out, I would be like, what do you mean? You know what I mean? I was very guilty of that. But now I'm confident enough in my sobriety to be like, just you do you, I'll do whatever. But I also think that people speak about things much more now. You know, it's very, very spoken about. Sobriety as a movement, isn't it? So I think it, maybe years ago it was something to be a little bit feared, you know, that something's happened, something's gone wrong for you to not drink. But now with, you know, loads of alcohol-free alternatives in the market, I think it's quite normal for children, well, you know, like young adults now to, what is it called, zebra stripe or something like that, where they have one drink and then they go on an alcohol-free drink. So it becomes more normal. I feel like the conversation's there and we're definitely understood a lot more, and maybe you know there's less of the dusting off a old Beck's blue bottle from the pub corner, but it is a difficult one to judge, I think.
I was one of those people that I actually vaguely remember saying, I used to say how I didn't trust people who didn't drink. I said that,
Full
and
circle.
and then I used to sort of say, oh, I'm not going out with him, he's boring, he doesn't drink, or doesn't drink much, him, he's boring, isn't he? You know, just, and it was, but it was my fear, it was my insecurity, you know, that sort of
A
like
hundred
I
percent.
needed to surround myself by people who drank as much as me. And I
No.
didn't want anyone to talk about not drinking because it scared me. It used to scare me. People used to either they didn't drink as much as me, or they were aware more of the dangers of drinking, or just because I was just so headstrong with it all. Do you know what I mean? Just.
And then there was always that one person that was sober or more sober than you at the end of the night who would then tell you what you'd been doing at the end of the night. And that's the people that I used to want to avoid.
Used to hate them. Used to hate them. What are you coming out for if you're not going to get absolutely slaughtered? You've been drunk. Oh my God.
I hope nobody tunes in just at this little part and here. And here's that, what you're coming out for. So much great chat, Lisa. Honestly, I think it's going to resonate with so many people. I just love how much you've achieved, and I've spoke to you about this before. I think it's inspirational that you jumped off, that you had the strength and the strength of mind and the understanding and awareness to just jump off that bus, and the fact that you're brave enough to speak about difficult things that come with a lot of shame quite often, that it would start to creep up and start to get a bit problematic, because these conversations need to be more normalized in order for
Yeah.
people to be able to have the confidence to take that step as well. So
Yeah.
I think it's going to be, yeah,
Well, I
fantastic.
think that's the job that you guys have got as well, isn't it? Just normalizing this. There's no stigma or shame attached to this. You know, it's a very, very common issue. And a lot of people suffer in silence. And I just don't think that we need to be doing that. You know, we just need to know there's support out there. There's always, I think that's the thing that I've heard in podcasts and literature, everything that I've submersed myself in the sober world. There's always somebody that's been through similar, worse, you know, than you. There's support there for you, and you don't need to go very far to look for it. Yeah, that's an important message from me.
Brilliant. Oh, Lisa, thank you very much for saying yes, even though you were nervous and
Yes.
you know, not sure how it would go. I hope I know it's gone great for you know, having listened and done a few of these now. I know, like Kelly says, it's going to be really well received. So thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you. Thanks
Yeah,
for having
thank you
me.
so much. Thank you.
Yeah. Kelly, for those listening to this who think these guys sound all right, don't they? It's not bad actually. Let's join this. How do they go about getting part of our community?
By the time this goes out, the website will be back up and running because it's getting updated just now. And
Which is
Lisa was
good.
talking about how much money you spend. Well, the new website's got a snazzy new calculator on it where you could jump on there and see actually how much you've been spending on alcohol, how much you can save, how many calories you could save, stuff like that. So if you want to join, go to the website, alcoholuncensored.co.uk, and you can join from there. If you get any questions around it, then just send us a message at team@alcoholuncensored.co.uk.
Brilliant. And we're working on a few other things, aren't we? Freshening things up sort of
Yeah.
behind the scenes as well. So watch this space in
Yeah.
terms of some of the stuff that we're going to be telling you all about, which is going to make it even better. So yeah, stick around, please, everybody. Right. Well, let's leave it there, shall we?
Yeah.
Lisa, thank you very much again. And everyone else, we'll see you again in a week's time.
Thank you.
See you
See ya.
later.
Thanks again. Bye-bye.